From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
At the close of a week that saw Israel bomb Gaza yet again, and apparent reward by the U.S. for those actions, with the largest arms aid package ever delivered in the history of mankind. The U.N. Security Council took up what it calls the Palestinian question on Thursday. Secretary Ban Ki-moon called attention to Israel's expansion of its settlement construction activities, noting that in the past 2 weeks alone, plans were advanced for another 463 housing units in part of the occupied West Bank. We bring you the Secretary General's presentation in its entirety here.
Your Excellency Murray McCauley, Minister for Foreign Affairs of New Zealand, distinguished ministers, distinguished members of the Security Council. First of all, I'd like to thank Foreign Minister McCauley for organizing this meeting at a crucially important timing. And before I say something, allow me to begin by wishing all Muslims who celebrated this week Eid Adha Mubarak. I also want to reiterate my hope for a swift and full recovery of former Israeli President Shimon Peres, who has been tireless in seeking peace between Israelis and Palestinians. Ladies and gentlemen, 23 years ago, almost to the day, the first Oslo Accord was signed between Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization. Unfortunately, we are further than ever from its goals. The two-state solution is at risk of being replaced by a one-state reality of perpetual violence and occupation. Despite warnings by the international community and the region, leaders on both sides have failed to take the difficult steps needed for peace. Mr. President, distinguished council members, just yesterday, militants in Gaza fired yet another rocket into Israel, which I condemn. Israel fired four missiles at targets in Gaza in response. Once again, I reiterate that such attacks and the response they elicit do not serve the cause of peace. In the past 2 weeks alone, plans were advanced for yet another 463 housing units in four settlements in Area C of the occupied West Bank. Official Israeli data shows that the second quarter of 2016 had the highest number of construction starts in 3 years. The decades-long policy that has settled more than 500,000 Israelis in Palestinian territory is diametrically opposed to the creation of a Palestinian state. Regrettably, the reporting period also saw the continuation of statements by both sides that only perpetuate an environment of mistrust. I am disturbed by a recent statement by Israel's Prime Minister portraying those who oppose a settlement expansion as supporters of ethnic cleansing. This is unacceptable and outrageous. Let me be absolutely clear. Settlements are illegal under international law. The occupation, stifling and oppressive, must end. The international community, including the Security Council and the Middle East Quartet, universally views the expansion of settlement as an obstacle to peace. I continue to be appalled that Palestinian parties choose to praise despicable acts such as the 1972 terrorist attacks against Israelis athletes at the Munich Olympics. The glorification of terror is disgraceful, and the Palestinian leadership must put an end to it. Distinguished members of the Council, Excellencies, as Palestinians prepare for the first local elections in over 10 years, we see increasing threats to the electoral process and the credibility of elected institutions, including politically motivated attacks and the growing number of questionable rulings. I'm particularly concerned by last week's decision of the Palestinian High Court to suspend all preparations while deliberations continue on a petition to cancel elections. Local elections in the West Bank and Gaza, if held in line with international standards, could provide an important renewal of Palestinian democracy and the first step toward advancing national unity. Regional efforts to encourage reconciliation and strengthen moderate political forces can also play a positive role. Mr. President, turning to Gaza, there has been progress in the 2 years since the 2014 ceasefire. Houses, hospitals, schools, and critical infrastructure have been repaired thanks to generous donors and good cooperation between Israel, the Palestinian Authority, and the United Nations. At the same time, 65,000 people remain displaced. More assistance is needed to rebuild nearly 5,000 destroyed houses. More coordination is required to accelerate ongoing reconstruction. Since 2014, the Gaza Reconstruction Mechanism has facilitated the entry of more than 1.5 million tons of construction material and helped significantly boost imports into Gaza, positively impacting the private sector. Israel has legitimate security concerns with regard to the smuggling or seizure of materials. Nevertheless, the mechanism is closely monitored and all sides continue to ensure that appropriate controls are in place for aid to reach its intended recipients. I encourage Israel and the Palestinian Authority to continue their cooperation with the United Nations and facilitate the import of reconstruction materials that are so vital to rebuilding people's lives, while ensuring that materials are not diverted for military use. Apart from reconstruction, Gaza's humanitarian needs run deep. More than 1.3 million of its 1.9 million people need of assistance. Continued humanitarian access and funding services to the Palestinian population in Gaza remain critical. In this dire context, UNRWA continues to face serious financial challenges. I appeal to member states for their generosity to ensure that UNRWA can carry out its activities effectively and in a predictable manner. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, looking at the broader situation, Gaza remains under closures and is a ticking bomb, time bomb. Instability and the risk of violent escalation are ever present. The continued arms buildup and militant activities by Hamas and other radical groups keep both sides of the border in a state of constant alert. The continued humanitarian deprivations of Gaza's nearly 2 million residents smother dreams and ambitions and feed instability and extremism. The corrosive Palestinian political divide worsens the humanitarian situation and stifles development. And the absence of a government of national unity, espousing the principles upon which to build peace, inhibits the realization of an end to the occupation and the establishment of a sovereign Palestinian state. In its July report, the quartet highlighted these complex political, security, and socio-economic dynamics in Gaza as one of the negative trends severely undermining hopes for peace. Lasting progress in Gaza can only be realized on the basis of Palestinian unity, an end to the illicit arms buildup and militant activities, and a full lifting of movement and access restrictions in line with Security Council Resolution 1860. Mr. President, distinguished members of the Council, turning to the Golan, I remain concerned by the continued breaches of the ceasefire line and by fighting in the areas of separation and limitation. These developments undermine the 1974 disengagement of forces agreement and jeopardize the ceasefire between Israel and Syria. In particular, recent fire from the Syrian Arab armed forces impacted the Israeli-occupied Golan. On both occasions, Israeli defense forces responded with an airstrike. I call on Israel and Syria to abide by the terms of the disengagement agreement and exercise maximum restraint. Mr. President, in a matter of days, the ad hoc liaison committee will meet here in New York. I encourage both sides to focus on positive policy shifts consistent with the transition to greater Palestinian civil authority in Area C, contemplated by prior agreements. To this end, I welcome the parties' recent agreement on outstanding electricity debt and the creation of a new energy market, which will transfer authority to the Palestinian government for the management of energy infrastructure. Such steps, echoing the intentions of Oslo, are critical to the viability of a future Palestinian state. At the same time, international stakeholders must continue to work towards a negotiated end to the occupation, now entering its 50th year, and the establishment of viable democratic Palestine, which lives in peace with Israel, each respecting the other's historic and religious connections to this holy land. Building on its report, the Quartet will continue its role to promote consensus to that end. I wish to thank my special coordinator, Nikolai Mladenov, for his unwavering commitment and continued engagement with the parties in what remains a challenging context. For the sake of regional and indeed global peace, we must intensify our efforts to encourage the Israeli and Palestinian leadership to take the difficult steps to change the destructive trajectory currently leading us towards a one-state reality. I thank you very much, Mr. President.
The permanent representative of the United States to the UN, Samantha Power, spent more time talking about Syria's government than about Israel.
Thank you very much, Secretary General Bonn, for your briefing today, and thank you, Foreign Minister McCulley, for chairing this meeting. Allow me also, on behalf of the United States, to wish former Israeli President Shimon Peres a speedy recovery. I last had the chance to meet President Peres at his office in Israel in February and greatly admire his ongoing work to promote peace and closer ties between Israelis and Palestinians. The United States shares the Secretary General's views about rising tensions on the ground, and we continue to condemn all terrorist attacks. All sides must exercise restraint, refrain from provocative actions and rhetoric. In the Golan Heights, we are alarmed by the increasing number of rockets and shells fired from Syria, as well as rockets launched from Gaza. In addition, there have been recent reports of incitement on social media, including on accounts allegedly linked to Fatah. We are also deeply concerned about allegations of excessive force by Israeli security forces against Palestinian civilians. This includes the killing and wounding of two Palestinian men inside their car in the Shufat refugee camp near East Jerusalem on September 5th. The Israeli Ministry of Justice has opened an investigation, and we look forward to seeing the full results. At the same time, we remain deeply concerned about attacks on the Israeli Defense Forces, including the stabbing of an Israeli soldier near Jenin on August 24th. The international community can make a tangible investment in this region's stability. Both reconstruction efforts in Gaza and programs run by the UN Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, are facing critical funding shortfalls. For Gaza, out of $3.5 billion pledged for reconstruction at the 2014 Cairo conference, just $1.6 billion has been dispersed so far. Even with limited funding, there has been some progress. 50% of damaged homes have been repaired, and more than 30% of fully destroyed homes have been rebuilt. But Gaza needs more support. For an economy with 41% unemployment, further disbursements of aid to Gaza will make a significant impact. UNRWA's financial shortfall of $74 million could leave more than 500,000 students out of school and 30,000 employees without paychecks next month. A suspension of UNRWA's core services could further destabilize an already volatile region. The United States has contributed an additional $12 million to fund UNRWA, bringing our total this year to nearly $329 million. Sweden and Switzerland have also stepped up with new contributions and pledges. We urge other governments to join this effort to avert a potential humanitarian crisis, which will have long-term effects. The United States strongly opposes continued Israeli settlement activity, which is corrosive to the cause of peace. As we have said repeatedly, such actions are not consistent with Israel's stated desire to achieve a two-state solution. We share the deep concern expressed by the Secretary General and other council members about reports in July that the Israeli government published tenders for hundreds of settlement units in East Jerusalem and advanced other settlement plans. We also share concerns regarding the Israeli government's attempts to retroactively legalize outposts illegal under Israeli law. Most recently, Ministry of Justice officials questioned the September 1 order from the High Court of Justice to demolish 17 houses in the Netiv Havot settlement outpost within 18 months. The court determined that these settlements were built on private Palestinian lands. There are also reports that the Israeli government has begun the process to take over or lease land privately owned by Palestinians to relocate the illegal Amona outpost, as well as to consider building homes for Israeli settlers in a military compound in Hebron. These cases represent unprecedented and troubling steps that are inconsistent with prior Israeli legal opinions. The cases also run counter to longstanding Israeli official policy not to seize privately owned land or use land originally seized for military purposes for settlements. The situation in Susia, which remains under threat of demolition, is also troubling. If the Israeli government proceeds with demolitions, it would have a very damaging impact on the lives of the area's Palestinian inhabitants who were already displaced on other previous occasions. These actions appear to be the latest examples of a steady acceleration of settlement activity and demolitions, which is systematically undermining prospects for a two-state solution. These concerns were addressed specifically in the Quartet report and have been raised repeatedly by the other Quartet members and the international community. We call on the parties to take significant steps urgently to stabilize the situation and to reverse current trends. We will continue to urge both sides to demonstrate through policies and actions a genuine commitment to preserving prospects for the two-state solution. The United States, as a member of the Quartet, co-authored the Quartet report, and we stand behind its recommendations in their entirety. Furthermore, we support the efforts of UN Special Coordinator Mladenov and his team, who continue to work tirelessly to promote peace and to keep us apprised of developments on issues that reflect the concerns of all members of the Security Council. Turning to Syria, as all of you are aware, after months of negotiations, the United States and Russia reached an agreement on a series of steps aimed at reducing the violence and alleviating the suffering of the Syrian people. The goal is also to create an environment conducive to negotiations on a political transition for Syria, which is the only way to end this horrific conflict. This agreement is not an agreement based on trust and promises. It is an agreement based on reciprocal actions, halting attacks and allowing for deliveries of assistance. So we look to Russia to deliver on its commitment to use its leverage to stop the Assad regime from employing the barbaric tactics it has long used in this conflict. That means a halt to the barrel bombs and a halt to the chemical weapons attacks, a halt to indiscriminate assaults on civilian areas, and a halt to the starve, get bombed, or surrender tactics that has characterized the Assad regime's approach to conflict. This plan starts with a nationwide cessation of hostilities that excludes Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIL. We urge all parties, regime and opposition, to adhere to the cessation of hostilities by stopping aerial bombardments and stopping attempts to take new territory. So far, early reports are that violence has decreased significantly, which is encouraging. But violence has not completely stopped. Progress toward a political solution will depend on all parties adhering to the cessation and all relevant governments using their influence to promote a sustained calm. I want to stress that the cessation of hostilities is only one part of the agreement. Humanitarian assistance also needs to flow. This ought to be straightforward, but the Assad regime has employed every possible tactic to disrupt aid deliveries. These include the regime removing medical supplies from convoys and withholding approvals for the UN to reach certain areas. The consequences, as we all know, are direct and immediate. Blocking aid kills people. These tactics have to stop. UN convoys have to be able to reach the nearly 600,000 Syrians living in besieged areas where people are almost entirely dependent on aid deliveries to survive. Not in a few weeks or months, but these convoys need to roll today. That means Damascus must grant swift final approvals and provide facilitation letters for assistance to reach all besieged and hard-to-reach locations. It also means the opposition must provide assurances that assistance will not be impeded in the areas that it controls. Only after we have seen improved humanitarian access and a sustained period of reduced violence will the United States and Russia take steps to establish a joint center to facilitate the targeting of Jabhat al-Nusra, al-Qaeda's affiliate in Syria, and ISIL. These are terrorist groups that pose a direct threat to our collective security and whose toxic ideologies are incompatible with the moderate opposition and incompatible with the aspirations of the Syrian people. Any party to this conflict who seeks to maintain its legitimacy should distance itself in every way possible from terrorist organizations. Targeting Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIL, however, cannot be a pretext for the Assad regime's indiscriminate attacks and besiegement tactics, which only increase the suffering of innocents and generates new recruits for these violent extremist groups. That is why the United States insisted in our negotiation with Russia that two things have to happen in parallel if we are to achieve our goals. We all must intensify our actions against terrorists, and Russia must ensure that Assad's forces are no longer involved in bombing in any opposition or Nusra areas, meaning the regime would no longer be able to use the excuse that it is targeting al-Nusra in order to go after its own people. To stress, if and when the Joint Center is stood up and sets in motion action against terrorist targets, Assad's military aircraft must simultaneously stop flying any combat missions over eastern Aleppo, the Damascus suburbs, Latakia, Idlib, Deraa, and any other areas where opposition forces or Jabhat al-Nusra are present. It is noteworthy and important that Russia agreed to this, as well as to the role of the Joint Center in monitoring the Syrian regime's compliance. That contributed significantly to our pursuit of this deal. Yet we are clear-eyed about the many challenges still to be tackled before we can reach this phase of the deal, and many new challenges will arise to implement it successfully, given the regime's track record of breaking its commitments and flouting its obligations, including obligations determined by this council. If all parties live up to their obligations, we have a chance to make progress toward a political solution. One civil defense volunteer in eastern Aleppo, Mohammed Omar, told a reporter that for the first time in far too long, quote, people are going about their business and children are even playing in the street, end quote. Children playing outside should not be an aberration, should not be worthy of comment in this council. All of us must do everything possible to make sure that this relative calm can be sustained. Thank you.
A member of Russia's delegation to the United Nations also spoke to the question.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. We are grateful to the Secretary General of the United Nations for his comprehensive statement. Despite a reduction in the level of tension on the ground, the situation in the Palestinian-Israeli situation remains a complex one. Various incidents in the West Bank and in Jerusalem, as well as sporadic shelling of Gaza and around Gaza, shows that the risk of escalation of the conflict continue to be high. Against the backdrop of the deadlock of a settlement, new initiatives arise on how to progress the peace initiative from its deadlock. These ideas in themselves seem not to be bad, and at the very least, they are directed at implementing truly needed things. However, we believe that they must complement actions which are being undertaken within the framework of the Trident mechanisms of the Middle East Quartet. Attempts to focus on other platforms will simply distill the international community's focus in tackling the Palestinian-Israeli problem. We agree with those who want to involve the Security Council in this. Perhaps they should more energetically move forward and progress their approaches. On the 22nd of September, on the margins of the high-level meeting of the 71st session of the General Assembly, there will be a ministerial meeting of the quartet. We would like to again draw your attention to the recommendations contained in the quartet's report, which was published on July 1st. We are convinced that progress in their implementation would create the conditions for an improvement of the situation in Palestinian-Israeli relations and to relaunch the political process on the basis of internationally recognized agreements. In this context, we'd like to reaffirm the key importance of the Arab Peace Initiative. The lack of Palestinian unity is another obstacle on the path to the relaunch of the political process. All of those who possess any sort of influence with the Palestinian side should prompt them to rapidly unite on the basis of the platform of the PLO and the quartet's principles. We continue to be concerned by the humanitarian economic situation in the occupied Palestinian territories and especially in the Gaza sector strip. This promotes a growth of discontent amongst the population and, of course, contributes to a radicalization of public opinion in society and complicates attempts to achieve a negotiated solution. There is a need to put an end to the violence and incitement here, to put an end to the settlement activity. We are convinced that lasting peace on the basis of a two-state solution will be in keeping with the yearnings of Palestinians to achieve statehood and sovereignty, as well as a desire of Israelis to live in security and safety. It will help to normalize the situation in the region as a whole. We continue efforts to overcome the negative trends in the Palestinian-Israeli situation and to return the situation to a political diplomatic format. We work directly with the participants of the conflict and all interested regional states. During the course of last year's contacts between us and Palestinian Premier Abbas and Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, said that they were interested to meet in Moscow to discuss optimal ways to unblock the peace process without any preconditions. Our activity is in keeping with international efforts targeted at forging a sustainable, lasting negotiations process between the Palestinian and Israeli sides. Naturally, this work will continue to be carried out in close contact with our quartet partners, key international and regional players. By way of conclusion, we would like to reaffirm our support for the activities of the Special Coordinator for the Middle East, Nikolai Mladenov. I thank you, sir.
That's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.